Thank you very much, Lynn, and thank you, Ron, and hello, everyone. Now, often I start with a song, but since Ron just played a song, I sat and was quiet with Ron's song. So I don't think I'm going to play a song today. I think I am just going to move into the teaching. We're here for the 7 steps to awakening. And tonight I'm going to begin with number 678. And I'm putting a link in the room to my journal for 678. For those of you who are not familiar with the teaching from the 7 steps to awakening, I'm going to read a quote first from a book that is titled The 7 Steps to Awakening. Maybe I will share a little bit. But then at some point I will go to my journal, which is basically what I wrote while contemplating this same quote. And the link that I have put into the room is to my journal. The quote that I'm beginning with tonight, number 678, comes from step 3 of the 7 Steps to Awakening. And you know what? I just got a kind of a feeling to go back and read the introduction to step 3. We haven't done that in a very, very long time because step 3 is a fairly long step. So let me just read the introduction, which, you know, we could kind of call the objective of step 3. Here's the objective of step 3. See how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. So this is the purpose of step 3. When we're listening to the step 3 quotes and contemplating the step 3 quotes, we are here so that we can literally see the ego. It's to bring the ego out of hiding, out of denial, out of repression, and shine that light of awareness on it. Again, step 3 objective. See how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. And so tonight, I'm starting with quote number 678, which is within step 3. This quote is from a teacher named Yoga Vasistha. And this is the quote. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. A couple things have come to mind very quickly, kind of almost simultaneously, which is why I giggled as I read this quote just now. One thing, I remember last week when I was teaching from the 7 Steps to Awakening, talking about that awakening is really annihilation of the mind. Sometimes people call this ego death. You may be more familiar with that term, ego death. So when the 7 Steps to Awakening uses the word awakening, you know, it's interesting because people use the word awakening in a lot of different ways. Sometimes people will use the word awakening just to refer to the beginning of the spiritual path, because in a way, sometimes that is an awakening, right? You were, you know, going about looking at the world and thinking and believing a certain way, and then maybe something happened that caused a complete turn in the way that you began to look at the world, look at yourself, look at your thoughts, and this complete turn is called the beginning of the spiritual path. But it's also kind of like an awakening, right? It's an awakening, and that's why a whole new beginning begins. And there are also different shifts along the way that people seem to refer to as awakening. And so whenever we hear that word awakening, we really need to listen very carefully to kind of hear the user's meaning of the word, because it just has a shifting meaning. And the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, when it uses that word awakening, it is pointing to the final end of the ego. We talked about this last week when we were looking at Yoga Vasistha quote, or 675 maybe, or it might have been 2 weeks ago. 675 says, if the ego sense ceases to be, then the illusory world appearance does not germinate again, and all cravings come to an end. Also, probably last week we were looking at quote 677. It is my fault that I still cling to the notion that you, my mind, is a real entity. When I realize that all these phenomena are illusory appearances, then you will become no mind, and all the memories of sense experiences, etc., will come to an end. And so I think it was in relation to that quote, 677, last week, where we were talking about the fact that awakening is really annihilation of the mind, or ego death. And this week's quote, 678, is pointing in that exact same direction. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. The destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. And Michael Langford did share a little bit with me about the title, The Seven Steps to Awakening. After he heard the teaching last week where we started this discussion about awakening really being annihilation of the mind, he said, I used the word awakening in the title, and he means of the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I used the word awakening in the title because that is a commonly used word and people are interested in it. It would have been more accurate if I had titled the book, The Seven Steps to Mananasa. And I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. It's a Sanskrit word. It's M-A-N-O-N-A-S-A. The Seven Steps to Mananasa. Mananasa means mind death. Who is going to read a book called The Seven Steps to Mind Death? And in fact, I looked up Mananasa online, and I found two definitions of the word. The definitions do not vary. They're just different English words. One was exactly what Michael said here, mind death. The other one was mind annihilation. Mind annihilation. Those were the two definitions that I found looking up the word Mananasa on the internet. So, what these quotes are really pointing to, is an awakening, you could say, that follows a death. It's the death of the false self, the death of the belief in me as this body, personality, mind. The complete death of that. And then a rebirth, a reawakening, a realization of the true self once this death has occurred. I think there's something else I'd like to share with you. I don't recall if I shared this with you last week or not, but if I did, I guess it's okay. I'll share it with you again. I'm running over to Facebook because I know I posted it there at one time. And I'll be able to find it pretty quickly there. I may have shared this with you last week. I really don't recall. But either way, it's fine. All right, here it is. This is a quote by Dr. David Hawkins. It's from chapter 16 of his book. The name of the book is I, Reality and Subjectivity. Okay, let me read this to you. The underpinnings of the ego are its illusion that it is a separate self and that the perceptions which its positionality produces are real. When these structures are transcended, the ego brings up its last reserves. These consist of the threat of death or the threat of facing the total void of nothingness or non-existence. When this arises, it becomes rapidly clear that one is now forced to make a decision and choose. Into this gap in the flow of consciousness, there will arrive beyond conscious recall, the knowingness of the sage, the bodhisattva, the teacher, the avatar, the knowingness of the enlightened beings of all times. Instructions will be known. I love this part. You know, here we are facing what appears to be death, and instructions will be known, right? This is why we learn to listen to what we call the Holy Spirit, because of course this is what's giving the instructions. Hold back nothing. Completely surrender life itself to God. Be willing to experience death. Refuse the void, for it is merely another illusion of the ego and has no reality. Truth has no opposite. End quote. Those were the instructions. And then Dr. David Hawkins continues, faith in the teachings of those who have realized the truth is crucial. They spring forth into awareness and strengthen the willingness to surrender to and experience the death that is simultaneously the birth of the self. By invitation and surrender, death becomes an experiential reality. It can be fearful and intimidating for a brief moment. It is not like the physical deaths that occurred in previous incarnations when one left the body with great relief. This is actually the first and also the last time that real death can be experienced. Therefore, it need be gone through only one time ever. With the courage of conviction and the inspiration of the true self and its teachers, one surrenders to the plunge. For a few moments, the last great fear erupts, and one experiences what it really means to die completely as the great door swings open to the splendor beyond all comprehension. The presence reveals that the infinite splendor is actually one's own self. Innate is the knowingness that one's reality is beyond all lifetimes, beyond all universes, total and complete. So if we listen to what Dr. David Hawkins is saying, and then we read again the Yoga Vasistha quote, I think it kind of emphasizes the quote a little more. Listen to what Yoga Vasistha says. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. Now that word happiness, we often take that word happiness kind of, you know, for granted. Like, I'm happy to have this ice cream right now. But I think that the word happiness here means much more, you know, what Dr. David Hawkins is describing when he says that the door swings open to splendor beyond all comprehension. The presence reveals that the infinite splendor is actually one's own true self, right? Innate is the knowingness. Think about this. Innate is the knowingness that one's reality is beyond all lifetimes, beyond all universes, total and complete. Now that's happiness in all caps, right? That's more than, I like this. I love this ice cream. I'm really happy they had my ice cream today, or I'm really happy the sun is shining today, or I'm really happy that you love me, right? It's way belong that happiness. Yeah. Yeah. Infinite, eternal love, bliss, Barb has written, which is the way that Michael Langford often describes it. So, you know, when we listen to this quote in light of what Dr. David Hawkins is saying, you know, it really kind of comes alive. The only way we can know that happiness which is beyond comprehension, right, is through the destruction of the mind. So through this mananosa, or however you say that word, right? Seven steps to awakening. That's what the awakening means. What I'm going to do for y'all is I'm going to actually play a very brief, it'll be an audio for you. It's actually a video, but you'll hear it as an audio. This is David Hawkins talking about this final doorway. I think this is only about 4 minutes, maybe a little longer. Let me know if you need any change to the volume. Let's have a listen. It's coming.
I would have to recall. Having surrendered everything, there was nothing left. I was in a very high space, rarefied, extremely rarefied space, in which there was no one, and very few beings had passed through this space. It's when you let go of all the ego, see? And in this infinite space of almost nothingness, there had been a couple of beings pass through this pass. It's like a high pass. I saw who had been there. They leave a track, a permanent track. You know? I saw Jesus Christ had been there. I saw the agony in the Garden of Gethsemane was the letting go of the agony of one's own existence, surrendering it to God, you see? And there was nothing left to surrender. And then came the knowingness, yes, accept your life. And then I got, this too must be surrendered to thee, O Lord. And I realized that there's the inner belief inside the ego that it is the source of your existence. And I saw that this too had to be surrendered to God. As I surrendered the source of life itself, I'd surrendered life itself to God. You surrender everything but life itself. And as I surrendered life itself, came forth an agony of dying. Severe. As a true agonized agony. The agony lasted in earthly time, perhaps a minute or a couple of minutes, but it was severe. And I just kept surrendering to it, and I kept surrendering it to it. And I saw that that which is called I would never again exist, because its source of life was now being extinguished and surrendered. So I let go, resisting the agony of it. Part of the agony was a deep terror, the terror of non-existence. And then came forth the saying from a guru somewhere in the distant past. All fear is illusion, surrender it to God. So I surrendered the fear of non-existence and losing life forever, becoming extinguished, in other words. I surrendered it out of faith to my teacher. That's the value of the energy field of the aura of the teacher. The true teacher is one who has experienced it absolutely through and through and speaks from the authority of having experienced it, not read about it, heard about it, learned about it, but done it. Therefore, the courage came forth. As I say, the fear and the terror was severe. And on the other side of the doorway of death, all of life opened up, all of existence opened up and shone forth as the glory of God, which is what shines forth in this room at this moment. that shines forth to me in this moment right now is the glory of God expressing itself as the phenomena that we are now collectively witnessing.
And that's the end of that. I remember last week I did read to you a Jan Fraser quote. In fact, I think it was probably the quote of the day at the time, or it had been a recent quote of the day. What I'm doing right now is going back to read that quote to you again. So I'm hopping over to the Awakening Together website and scrolling back through the daily quotes. Here we go. This is the one. It's the daily quote from October 11th. Many spiritual seekers who say their wish is to awaken don't actually want what they believe they do. This becomes clear sometimes at the approach to the brink of what feels like a void, where the obliteration of the egoic self seems imminent. With a shocked recognition of what is being asked, the person will recoil. The scale of the loss, the dissolution of the familiar self, is beyond what was bargained for. So here we have, I'm going to say four good teachers. We have four good teachers all telling us the same thing. We have Yoga Vasistha saying, it is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. We had Michael Langford saying that, really the name of this book, would be The Seven Steps to Manonasa, which means The Seven Steps to Mind Death. But, who would read a book like that? So it's called The Seven Steps to Awakening. We have Dr. David Hawkins talking about this dying, this doorway of death, that you had to surrender everything, including life itself, and completely die, right? And then we have Jan Fraser talking about this brink where the obliteration of the egoic self seems imminent. And then I pause. I personally am grateful for these types of teachings. I have not experienced this invitation of grace where this opportunity to die the ego death is provided, and we will either surrender to it, as Dr. David Hawkins described, or recoil away from it, as Jan Fraser described. But I'm happy to know about it, because if I know about it, I can prepare. I remember a long time ago when I was in the Air Force in my office, one of my teammates had a sign hanging above his desk that said something about a prepared mind. I don't remember the exact idea of the quote, but basically it was something like, a prepared mind will be able to face what it needs to face, will be able to go through what it needs to go through. And that's why I'm grateful for these teachings. Some people are afraid of these teachings. Some people even want to deny these teachings. Some people want to say that you don't need to die any kind of an ego death. There's no such thing as an ego death. We're all awake now, which there's a truth to, we're all awake now. The awakeness is present, but the ego is blocking it. Even Jesus, when I read the Bible, I hear Jesus more than once talking about this ego death, right? He says that the one who wants to save his life will lose it, and the one that is willing to lose his life for the gospel will save it. To me, those words are saying the exact same thing. So here we are. We have a quote. 6, 7, 8 from the Yoga Vasistha. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. Now, to my knowledge, there is no way that I can make the invitation of grace happen. And in fact, I've never heard anyone say that you can make the invitation of grace happen. So I think that's probably a true statement, that this invitation of grace, where you're invited to allow the ego death to occur, comes as it comes. But what I have heard many teachers say is that if you're not prepared for it, you may do exactly what Jan Fraser talks about, recoil. You may not be able to do what Dr. David Hawkins talks about, which is surrender and allow yourself to go through these 2 minutes or so of agony. And so, again, it seems useful to prepare. To prepare for whenever this invitation of grace may come, this unknown invitation. Again, I talked the other night about how, Jesus said in the Bible, it will come like a thief in the night. And actually, you know, when my mind reads some passages, I get two simultaneous interpretations, both of which are pointing to truth. And one simultaneous interpretation of it will come like a thief in the night is that the ego will come to steal your self-interest back. And I think that's the interpretation I shared the other night. Yeah. Another interpretation that has come to my mind when I read that is that this invitation to grace comes when you least expect it. You know, you can't plan for it in that, you know, I'm going to go to India. And while I'm in India, I'm going to sit in a cave and meditate, and that invitation is going to come. You know, you can't do that. You can prepare for it, but you can't actually kind of plan for it. And Jesus told his disciples to, you know, to be on watch, right? We could say be on watch for the ego's return. Also, be on watch could be interpreted as prepare ourselves. Always prepare ourselves for God's grace. Oh, yeah, and Lynn is quoting Rumi. It's really the same thing. Be watchful. The grace of God appears suddenly. So how do we be watchful in the way that Rumi and Jesus are saying? How do we be watchful? Well, the answer that comes to me when I ask that question, of course, each one I think needs to ask the question for themselves, how do I be watchful, right? But the answer that comes to me is basically by not enlivening the mind. By not enlivening the mind. So meditation is a good example, right? When we sit in meditation, whenever we notice our attention has drifted to thoughts, we bring the attention back away from thoughts to awareness, watching awareness. But if your life is anything like mine, you aren't sitting in meditation 12 hours a day, nor can you just right now with the circumstance of your life. So there needs to be other tools that also assist you in not listening to this mind, not enlivening this mind. You know, and we have several tools. We have the teachings of Inner Ramana with the I Am That I Am mantra and the practice of surrender. We have self-inquiry, both from the teachings of Inner Ramana and from Ramana Maharshi and from Nisargadatta Maharaj, right? We have, Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching of just staying very, very present with what's right in front of you now instead of the mind wandering. But what we're doing is we're not enlivening the mind, not strengthening the mind. And when we don't enliven the mind, when we don't strengthen the mind, when we don't feed the mind with our attention, the mind does begin to fade. It may still be present, but it's weaker. Its power over us is less. And when it's weaker and its power over us is less, we begin to notice another guide, and I know you all are familiar with this guide. I like to call it intuition. The Course in Miracles refers to it as the Holy Spirit. And in fact, the less that we listen to the mind, the stronger or clearer this intuition becomes. And in fact, let me say one more thing, because this is really important. If we really want the spiritual intuition to become very, very strong, we need to listen to it. You know, for example, let's say I'm in a group of people who are gossiping about someone who's not here, of course. We always gossip about who's not here, right? So we're gossiping about someone who's not here. And my intuition guides me just to kind of stay out of the conversation. But at the same time, of course, you know, you have the ego tempting you to take part, to be a part. If I choose to listen to the ego and I choose to take part, I'm telling the inner intuition, no, I don't want you. And in a way, what happens is I repress the inner intuition. Every time I choose to listen to the ego instead of the inner intuition, the ego becomes enlivened and the inner intuition goes dormant. It doesn't die. The inner intuition will never die. But it kind of goes back a little bit where I hear it less and less. If I want the opposite to occur, if I want my intuition to be loud and clear, you know, Dr. David Hawkins referred to this as the knowingness that came to him when he was at this door of death. He had this knowingness that helped him through it. If I want my intuition to be loud and clear so that I can hear that knowingness, then I want to not listen to the ego and do listen to the intuition every time it shows up. Every single time it shows up, I want to listen to it. And the more I listen to it, the more clear it becomes. So when I'm sitting around with the friends and the intuition is telling me not to take part in the conversation, that's what I want to do. I want to sit quietly, not taking part in the conversation. If we prepare ourselves by practicing in this way all of the time, which again, Lynn quoted A Course in Miracles a moment ago, be vigilant only for God and His kingdom. That's really what this is. By not listening to the ego and listening to intuition, we are being vigilant for God and His kingdom. If I practice this way, if I live my life in this way, along with wonderful practices like contemplation and meditation, I am preparing myself so that when that grace invitation comes and this terror that Dr. David Hawkins described comes, sure, the terror is there. Sure, the ego is kicking and screaming. But I have trained myself to disregard the ego. I have trained myself to rest, accept, and trust. To let the ego kick and scream without listening to it and following its guidance. And simultaneously, in addition to my having prepared myself to not listen to ego, in addition to that, I have really practiced and listened and practiced and listened to that inner intuition, to that knowingness. So when that knowingness comes up, you know, Dr. David Hawkins described one sentence, and when we were listening to him talk, he described one sentence he heard the knowingness say. He said he felt this agony. The agony was a type of terror, and that really what the knowingness said to him was that all fear is illusion, right? He heard that all fear is illusion. And he had so much trust in the knowingness that in spite of terror, unlike anything he'd ever experienced before, he was able to put his faith, not just his faith, his action, his decision with the knowingness. He was able to, for that 1 or 2 minutes that this agony lasted, he was able to just continually surrender, surrender, surrender. Might be much like the experience of rest, accept, and trust, surrender, surrender, surrender. Right? Until it passed, the death completed itself. He didn't really need to do anything but not run. Right? The death completed itself as he did nothing. Remember A Course in Miracles, I need do nothing. But what gave him the power to do nothing was his faith in the knowingness. So we can't make this invitation of grace come. You know, some people say you can make yourself more, they say grace is an accident and you can make yourself more accident prone, you know, by being very, very focused on your spiritual practice, very focused on meditation. Meditation is the one practice I see most recommended by all teachers. Even self-inquiry is a type of meditation, right? So we can make ourselves more accident prone, but even that's not a guarantee. You can't say that I'm meditating so that I can make this invitation of grace happen. It just doesn't work that way. But as we prepare ourselves for this all caps happiness, something else does begin to happen. And it is a happiness. It is a happiness. We find that as we give more and more attention to our spiritual practice, and by that I do mean more and more attention to not giving attention to the ego, right? And more attention to listening to and trusting inner intuition, turning our attention away from, chit-chat in the mind, chatter-chatter. As we do this, there is a happiness, there is a peace that begins to arise even before mind death, even before that awakening. And in fact, A Course in Miracles really says this is what it's leading us to, is this inner peace. A Course in Miracles says that knowledge, I'm sure you all know by A Course in Miracles, would be this equal to this awakening, equal to this mind death, equal to this what's on the other side of the doorway of ego death. That would be knowledge. That's the way A Course in Miracles calls it. It calls it knowledge, and it calls it love, and it calls it heaven. A Course in Miracles says that knowledge is out of scope for the Course. You can't study the Course and make that invitation of grace arise. And so knowledge is out of scope for the Course. However, you can prepare yourself. And as you prepare yourself, you're going to find yourself more at peace, more joyful, happier, right? So you could argue, if you wanted to, that there are two benefits to spiritual practice. One benefit is that you are preparing yourself so that when the invitation of grace comes, that you can allow it to complete itself without running. But the other benefit is, even on this side of the doorway, you become happier, more peaceful, more joyous, more relaxed. I'm going to read something to you from NTI. It's an NTI Revelation, chapter 6. And what's happening in NTI, now some of you may not even know Revelation in the Bible, and that's okay. But in Revelation of the Bible, there's this scroll with seven seals that's being busted open. And the first several seals, the first six seals, are busted open in Revelation chapter 6. And so what's happening in NTI is that these six seals are being reinterpreted. I want to read to you the reinterpretation from NTI of the fifth seal and the sixth seal, because they fit very much with what we're talking about now. The fifth seal represents the options of fear and trust. In the moment of not knowing, this is the choice that must be made. You must choose to trust that which you do not know, or choose to fear it. And this choice is everything that follows given. Now, I can tell you, of course, I was the scribe of NTI. So what that means is that I know exactly what these words are referring to. Someday, you know, Regina Dunn-Akers will no longer be here, and other people might be reading NTI. I don't know that they will, but if they do, you know, they may interpret these verses a little differently. But I know what these verses meant, because when you are the scribe, you don't just hear the words. You have mental images and feelings and everything else that's telling you exactly what these words mean. So I know what these words mean. And what these words are primarily talking about is this invitation of grace. That is the moment of not knowing. When this invitation of grace comes, you know, you can't say that you know what's on the other side of that door. So it's a very strong moment of not knowing. And NTI says at this point you have to make a choice. And that's what we heard Dr. David Hawkins say. You have to make a choice, right? And it says you will choose either fear or trust. And based on what you chose, everything else that follows is going to happen. So, of course, if you choose fear, you're going to do what Jan Fraser talked about. You're going to recoil from the invitation. If you choose trust, you're going to do what Dr. David Hawkins talked about. You're going to listen to that knowingness. You're going to be able to surrender, rest, accept, and trust, do nothing, and allow the ego death to complete itself. But here's something else I want to read to you from NTI, because this, I've always perceived this as very, very good news. Well, first of all, it talks about the sixth seal. It says the sixth seal represents the end of perception, right? The end of perception. And remember, we saw Yoga Vasistha a couple weeks saying again that when the ego sense ceases to be, the illusory world appearance will not germinate again. We could call that the end of perception. Right? So the sixth seal represents the end of perception. The way you see shall be based on how you have chosen. You will see illusion, which has stepped forward to be released. That means you chose trust. And so now you're allowing it to happen. Or you shall see fear made real and you shall run from it. So again, there's our two choices now being experienced. We chose trust. We allow this ego death to complete itself and we pass through the eye of the needle. Or we run, right? Or we run. But then I love what NTI says next. It says, fear shall not be your victory. In making this choice, you shall know that you have chosen death. And death here just means you're still on this side of the doorway. You did not pass through to what Dr. David Hawkins described as all life opened up, glory of God. You did not pass through that doorway. So, by choosing fear, you shall know that you have chosen death. You'll know that you passed on the invitation. Once that doorway closes up, you'll know, right? But even this is an illusion. Listen to this. The fact that you didn't accept the invitation. You said no. You recoiled. You got afraid. NTI says, even this is an illusion. As anything that is not love is not real, right? You experience the effects of fear because you have chosen the effects of fear. In seeing this and knowing the gratitude of the truth is true, you offer yourself the opportunity to step back and choose once again. In other words, if this invitation should come and we refuse it, that is not a failure. That is only an indication that more preparation is needed. Fear will never be the final choice. The final choice for each and every one of us is going to be going through that eye of the needle, going through that doorway, choosing trust. Until then, our job is to prepare. Right? That's what we are doing. Our job is to prepare to the best of our ability. And again, we don't know when that invitation is coming. It could come to any one of us, tonight, tomorrow, right? We don't know. It comes like a thief in the night. to steal away our ego. Barb says, and it has. Yeah. So now what we haven't done yet, and I only have a few minutes left, we haven't looked at the journal entry for 6, 7, 8. So again, the quote, Barbara says, for some, not for me yet. Yeah, not for me yet either, Barb. But you know what? That's fine. We know where we're at then. We're in preparation. And up until we pass through the eye of the needle, we are preparing. And not only that, we can become more and more skilled at preparing in every moment. Now, one thing I want to say about preparing is preparing should not be put off until tomorrow. You know, preparing is always right this moment now. Preparing is always right this moment now. Barb says she's building her intense desire for liberation. That is a highly recommended means of preparation, right? But I think the talk that we did this morning was about contemplating. When you listen to a sage, then not just quickly going to other thoughts, but really contemplating deeply what that sage said, while it is still fresh in your mind, right? That is another way of preparing. So there are other ways. Sitting in meditation is preparing. Practicing what the Course calls forgiveness is preparing. But we don't want to put our preparation off until tomorrow. That's what this moment now is for. I want to read to you another Jan Fraser quote, by the way. This is from October 7th. There are many kinds of knowledge, only one of them worth everything, only one of them not subject to opinion or degree or damage. If you come to that, you will know what I mean. And then she says, if you don't, listen to someone who has. Listen to someone who has. This is another way that we prepare. We listen to those who know. We really listen. We listen to Dr. David Hawkins, right? We listen to Jan Fraser. We listen to Michael Langford. We listen to Jesus, and we know the right interpretations of the teachings in the New Testament. There's some very, very clear words in the New Testament. People who take the MPP program, Jesus of the New Testament, are amazed at what they find Jesus saying when they learn how to actually read the New Testament with the right mind. There is so much clarity available to us. We need to be honest about where we are. If you've gone through that ego death, you'll know it. I mean, Jan Fraser says, if you come to that, you will know what I mean, right? If you come to that, you will know what I mean. But then she says, if you don't, or if you haven't, listen to someone who has. So that's another part of our preparation, knowing who to listen to, listening well, listening very, very well. And again, that's what this morning's gathering was about. You know, when you go and you listen to a sage, instead of jumping up and going off chattering right away with your friends, while that teaching is very fresh in your mind, stay and contemplate it, right? Let the teaching work on you. Let the teaching work on you. So we still haven't gotten to the journal, and now I'm down to 4 minutes left, so let's see what's in the journal, or if we have to spend another week on 678. It is by the destruction of the mind that there can be happiness. This, again, is the Yoga Vasistha quote that we've been discussing all night long. All right, so in the journal, in 678, it says, the reward for releasing attachment to the idea I am a person is realization of true self and the joy, love of being true self. One must look honestly at the emotional effects of the belief I am a person. When the emotional effects are contrasted honestly with the freedom of the true self, the desire for I am a person weakens because it is seen there is no real reward there. So this is a part of what Barb was talking about when she said with her preparation right now, what she's really focusing on is building her intense desire for liberation. And A Course in Miracles says that the Holy Spirit teaches through contrast. And, you know, what that really means is notice, notice, notice. When you let yourself get sucked in by ego, how do you feel? Are you genuinely happy? Genuinely at peace? I mean, be honest. When you listen to that ego, and we all do, right? We all do, because it's not dead yet for us. So when we get sucked in and when we listen, look at how you feel. Look with an observer point of view. Is this what you want? Do you want to feel this stress or this upset or this hatred or this jealousy or this envy or this fear or whatever? Do you want to continue to listen to ego and continue to feel like this? If you pay attention to that emotional body, as Eckhart Tolle called it, you'll notice the heaviness of it. And you are wise enough to know you don't want this. You are wise enough to know that peace, joy, love, spontaneity, you know, this is what feels right, because this is what's natural for you. So if you really pay attention, instead of paying attention to the story, once you do get sucked in, switch and pay attention to how it makes you feel. Even subtle stress. Just subtle stress, subtle annoyance is not the same as happiness, love, spontaneity, peace. And if we pay attention to how we feel when we do get sucked into listening to ego, that is going to help us lose interest in listening to ego. And remember, one of the ways that we prepare is by listening to ego less and intuition more. So if we can learn by observing the effects of ego on our emotions that we don't want that, we naturally begin to lose interest in listening to it, then we are also preparing. So I'll read that one more time, and then I have to go and get Suzanne Maria. So if someone can take the mic and play a song while I go get her, that would be great. And I will leave the room for a moment, and then when I get her, I'll come back in the room. But again, the journal entry says, the reward for releasing attachment to the idea I am a person is realization of true self and the joy love of being self. One must look honestly at the emotional effects of the belief I am a person. When the emotional effects are contrasted honestly with the freedom of self, the desire for I am a person weakens because it is seen there is no real reward there. And I need to run. I'm a minute late calling Suzanne. I'll see you all in a few minutes.